Welcome to NBA Talk with Isaac Wolf. I'm your host, Isaac Wolf. Let's talk about what's happened so far in the playoffs since we last recorded an episode. Bucks Heat. The Bucks complete the sweep in game four, 120-103. Giannis got his first playoff triple-double, 20 points, 12 rebounds, and 15 assists. Brooke Lopez added 25 points. Bryn Forbes had 22, 7 of 14 from three. So 21 of his 22 points came from the three-point line, which I assume means he had an and one on one of his shots because he was one of one from the free throw line. Bryn Forbes, I don't know if you've heard of him, but he outscored Jimmy Butler this series. Jimmy scored 58 points. Bryn scored 60. That's kind of sad, but really impressive at the same time. You know, if you look at it from both sides, both perspectives. And Forbes' story is actually pretty cool. He was undrafted out of Michigan State after playing his first 2 years of college at Cleveland State. He worked for the last roster spot. He was the 15th man in San Antonio his rookie year. Spent a lot of time in the G League that rookie year. But he earned his way into the rotation. He averaged like 23 points a game in the G League. Shot 45% from three, 50% from the field. You know, his shooting is really what got him into the rotation. And then after that rookie year where he spent 95% of his time, I'll say, in the G League, he had three quality years in San Antonio for the Spurs. His third season in the league, he played all 82 games and started 81 of them. He went from undrafted G League player in his rookie year to 2 years later playing 82 games, starting 81, averaging 11.8 points per game. He signed with the Bucks this offseason. I believe it was a two-year deal. 10 points a game in the regular season, 15 points a game so far in the playoffs. How about that? Big-time shooter off the bench, and it is crucial because he plays the position that Dante DiVincenzo plays. DiVincenzo was ruled out for the rest of the playoffs with, I believe it was a torn ligament in his foot. And they're not starting Forbes. They're starting Connaughton, but I believe that's because they need some offensive firepower, you know, off the bench. And I think Forbes plays better with the second unit because he's the main scorer for them in terms of being on the second unit. But Lakers Suns game three, 105-95 Lakers. Anthony Davis again stepped up after that poor game one performance. Played well in game two, played well in game three. Lakers won both games. Chris Paul was severely limited, at least physically. That shoulder injury or whatever it was from game one, it was just a really confusing injury because it's hard to pinpoint what it was, but it looked like it was his shoulder that was bothering him. I mean, he's not even averaging 10 points a game this series, so clearly it's a problem. 7 points, 5 rebounds, 6 assists for Paul. His lack of being his normal self on the court is making a huge difference. It made a huge difference for the Suns in games 2 and 3. He's not a player that you can replace. Maybe statistically some guys can bring, you know, higher points per game averages, higher rebounds per game. But the things he brings mentally, how he leads his team, how he commands the game and controls the offense, it's not stuff he can replace. I believe that's why Phoenix went 0-2 those next two games with Paul, you know, severely limited in his ability to specifically shoot. Dribbling was also a problem as well, but shooting, I mean, it was his shooting shoulder. It was his right shoulder, which certainly didn't help. Game four, you saw the difference in the Suns with a healthy Chris Paul versus without a healthy Chris Paul. The Suns had control basically the entire game. LeBron's alley-oop was great. The off-the-backboard from Caruso, that was really the only Laker highlight. Anthony Davis pulled his groin and was ruled out for game five. We'll talk about that in a second. Here is where I have a problem with what happened in this game. It was 95-88. The Lakers were on the way to a comeback. They were down 18 at one point. They had cut it all the way to 7. Dennis Schroeder gets a pretty easy look at the basket, misses a layup. I think it was slightly contested. I didn't think it was anything he should have missed, but Schroeder misses the layup, and both him and LeBron literally stand on the other end. They stay there, while the Suns go on the fast break the other way. It is 5-on-3. LeBron's man, Jay Crowder, hits the corner three to make it a 10-point game. Maybe it was a wing three, corner three, whatever. He hit a three, and it made it a 10-point game. LeBron literally didn't even, like, walk towards the play. He was so disappointed in Schroeder missing the layup that he just, it looked like he gave up. It was pathetic. It was a very pathetic effort by LeBron James. And to me, that's what sealed the Lakers' fate right there in that game. I thought, you know, obviously if Schroeder had made it, it's a 5-point game different. But if Schroeder and LeBron, specifically LeBron, I think Schroeder eventually got back into the play by the time Crowder's three got to the rim. But if LeBron and Schroeder gave effort to get back on defense in that play, at least get the stop and then come back down the floor, maybe hit a three in transition. You have no idea. But my goodness, that's what sealed it for me. I was like, okay, LeBron just gave up. It was pretty sad to see. But anyway, final score, 100-92. LeBron, 25 points, 12 rebounds, 6 assists. He had a good game statistically. I want to talk about the Laker rotations in this game because Montrezl Harrell played 4 minutes. He played 4 minutes in this game. 0 points and 2 rebounds. And Marcus Gasol had 12 points and 8 rebounds in 23 minutes. Montrezl Harrell, former Sixth Man of the Year, I believe the reigning Sixth Man of the Year. Well, Jordan Clarkson won it this year. Last year, I believe it was Montrezl Harrell. He played 14 minutes in game one and had 12 points. He brought a lot of energy, you know, off the bench in game one. It really kept the Lakers in it early on, at least. His and one buckets down low, finishes down low, dunks. I mean, the Lakers' interior defenders needed some sort of energy after Anthony Davis's exit. That's what Harrell brings. He brings energy. Now, is this a punishment for when he trucked Cameron Payne in game one? I have no idea. I honestly don't understand why he's not playing. He's better than Gasol. Now, obviously not according to these stats, but Gasol played 19 more minutes than he did. But yes, Gasol is a former Defensive Player of the Year. So it's kind of unfair for me to criticize him in that regard. But Harrell's more athletic. Gasol's a little bit bigger. But Harrell's more athletic. And he just brings more energy. I felt like Gasol didn't bring what the Lakers needed in that game. I feel like, you know, he has a great all-around offensive game, Gasol does. And he's solid on defense as well. But I feel like the Lakers needed some sort of energy. Harrell just didn't play. I don't know why. 4 minutes, again, 4 minutes, 0 points, 2 rebounds. That was very, very perplexing. DeAndre Ayton, he has really impressed me. He had 14 points and 17 rebounds in this game. He's averaging about 20 points a game, almost 14 rebounds a game, shooting 80% from the field. How about that? His shot selection is unbelievable. Now, yes, he's 7-1, 250, 260, whatever. He should be, you know, shooting 80% from the field. But, you know, he just sits in the dunker spot, waits for the drive and dish, gets a lot of dunks that way. Pick and roll, very, very good at finishing off of that. And of course, when he got Chris Paul as your point guard, you're going to be able to convert a lot of those opportunities because he puts you in really great spots to succeed. His rebounding is, you know, top tier to me. He uses his frame well. He's very strong. And he has outperformed Andre Drummond so far. And probably, yeah, he has outperformed Anthony Davis in terms of consistency. AD had the better 2 games, 2 and 3, but like, he didn't play game 5 and was doing just okay before he got injured in game 4. And then game 1, we obviously know he was not great. DeAndre Ayton has, you know, outperformed both Laker bigs, and it's pretty impressive. He's finally looking like a number 1 pick. Like, a lot of people were saying Jaren Jackson was better than him. Now, obviously, Jackson tore his meniscus and is still coming back from that. But Ayton's looking better than Jackson right now, at least. Obviously, Doncic and Young are the top 2 in those in that draft class. But Ayton has finally, I think, put himself in the top 3. Game 5 was a Suns blowout. There's nothing to discuss here. It was 118-85. Other than, the Lakers were pitiful without Davis, and the Suns were excellent. So that series is 3-2 Phoenix, and LeBron is on the verge of losing in the first round for the first time in his career. Do I feel like he's going to flip the switch and, you know, win the series even if he doesn't have Anthony Davis? Yeah, it's hard to bet against LeBron, but after that bum effort on that one play, I don't know, man. That was just sad. There's no other way to put it. Let's move on. Hawks-Knicks. The Hawks took advantage at home in game three. They got hot late in the second. A 19-3 run carried the momentum into the second half, and they won 105-94. 21 points and 14 assists for Trae Young. Some things I noticed from this game. The Knicks are, they truly are one of the best defensive teams in the league. And yes, I say that after they lost. But, I mean, they are the best defensive team in the league. All of their games this series have been around or under 100 points. 107-105 in game one. 101-92 in game two. 105-94 in game three. That's just not normal in today's NBA. That's low scoring for today's NBA. That would be considered high scoring, you know, back in the 2000s. But when the Pistons were holding teams to 60, 70 points. But I'm really impressed with the Knicks defense. However, it fell apart in the third quarter of game four. It was a close first half. But the Hawks scored 35 points in the third quarter. And, you know, that's uncharacteristic of New York, but the Knicks offense, they can't keep up. They have two main weapons, Randall and Rose. Occasionally a third if RJ Barrett decides to show up, if Alec Burks pops off for 27 like he did in game one or whatever. But, I mean, offense is the Knicks' Achilles heel. They can't keep up with Atlanta's offense. I mean, that offense is loaded. It's got Trae Young. We know what he does. Kevin Herter's a shooter. Bogdan Bogdanovic is a shooter and a scorer, really. Collins, obviously. And then Clint Capella down low. I mean, that team is loaded. Gallinari and Lou Williams coming off the bench. Like, that team is loaded offensively. They're not great defensively. But it's okay because the Knicks offense is bad. Anyway, 3-1. That series is in favor of the Hawks. Game 5 tonight in New York. I'm hoping the Knicks pull it out and win one more game. One more playoff game at home before they ultimately go down in Game 6. That's my prediction. But Nets Celtics, game three, Kyrie's first game back with the fans. Yeah, yeah, it's been that long since Kyrie showed up to Boston because his first year in Brooklyn last year, before COVID, when there were fans allowed, he was like, I don't even know. I'm pretty sure he was fine. I don't think he was actually injured. He just decided not to show up and didn't play in the Nets game against the Celtics. And then they never played in Boston again until, you know, the start of this season when there were no fans. But now, in the playoffs, I mean, the Celtics fans took full advantage and they just booed him like crazy. They channeled that energy into their play in the first half. The Celtics did. Tatum had 21 in the first half. Durant had 17. The second half, Harden, KD, and Tatum all stepped it up. Celtics up 5 with less than a minute. Tatum hits a dagger right in Kevin Durant's face. Kind of a Kevin Durant move. Just a pull-up right over him. 50 points. Jason Tatum scored 50 points. This is becoming regular, guys. He had 60 late in the regular season. I feel like he had 50 another time recently. And now he's got 50 in game three in the playoffs. 50 in the playoffs. Jason Tatum is a superstar on the verge of being a superstar. I won't say superstar quite yet. But he's on the verge of being a superstar. 41 for Harden, 39 for Durant. Kyrie Irving scored just 16. Yes, the big three combined for 96, but the rest of the team combined for 23. Literally, there was no help. They need some contribution. Meanwhile, the Celtics had four guys in double figures. Tatum with 50, Smart 23, Fournier 17, Tristan Thompson 19 points and 13 rebounds. Best game of the series, best game of the playoffs, maybe best game of the season for him. Kemba, just 6. The Celtics shot 50% from the field. They played well together as a unit. In game four, the Nets responded. Kemba and Robert Williams were both out. And we knew, I predicted this sweep, but we knew that the Celtics couldn't get more than one win against this team. I mean, seriously. The big three combined for 104 points. 104 points from three freaking players. Durant had 42, Kyrie had 39, Harden only had 23. That's a low-scoring game for him. I mean, you can't compete with that. 141-126, the final score. After this game, the Boston fans, or at least this one Boston fan, went over the, crossed the line. He threw a water bottle at Kyrie. It looked full because it was flying too fast to be empty. And, this came after Kyrie, you know, we all know, we saw, stomped on the logo and stuff. But that fan was arrested and charged with assault and battery with a dangerous weapon. Personally, I think that's a little extreme. Yeah, it's a water bottle. Yeah, it looked like a relatively big water bottle. It looked like bigger than like the 16.9 fluid ounces that you normally drink. But battery, assault, battery with a dangerous weapon and assault. I mean, the worst it was going to do was bounce off his afro. Like, seriously, I don't think much would have... I mean, obviously, it would have been a big deal if it actually hit him. It didn't, actually, but... I mean, it would have just bounced off his afro. I really don't think it was going to be that big of a deal. But you can tell the fans are anxious to be back in the stands. You know, having a relatively normal playoffs now, normal playoff atmosphere. This series is 3-1 Nets. Game 5, however... Kemba and Robert Williams still out. The Nets close out the series. 123-109. Harden 34-10-10. Tatum 32-9-5. After this game, this was announced earlier today, major changes for the Celtics. Danny Ainge is out as president of basketball operations. He's retiring, according to the reports. Brad Stevens will replace him. Brad Stevens is no longer the head coach. He's not going to do both like some people do. He is going to be just president of basketball operations, Danny Ainge's successor. And now... the Celtics are looking at Chauncey Billups, Jason Kidd, and Lloyd Pierce as head coach candidates. I think Jason Kidd is the best fit. I think Lloyd Pierce would not be good because he did a terrible job with a good team in the Hawks. Like, they were pathetic when he was the coach. And then when Nate McMillan came in, they just started winning. And now they're fifth in the East. And they're about to win their first-round playoff series. So I think Jason Kidd should get the job. Chauncey Billups should certainly get consideration. I think he's a quality candidate. Clippers Mavs game 3. Clippers down 2-0 in desperate need of a win because, you know, if they lose here, they're done because nobody ever comes back from down 3-0. Certainly not the Clippers, who were up 3-1 last year and blew a lead to the Nuggets. Kawhi and PG finally hit their stride in the second half. First half, Luka was up. Luka scored the first 8 points of the game. He literally outscored the Clippers in the first like 3 minutes of the game, 8-0. Dallas was up 32-11. The Clippers were basically dead, but they came back and made it 63-61 at half. Paul George was a big part of that. 22 first half points, Leonard 18. Second half, George not as hot. Leonard stayed consistent. Another 18 points in the second half. The Clippers, after trailing like crazy in the first half, they held the lead the entire second half. Kawhi Leonard and Paul George played well when they needed to. 36 for Leonard, 29 for George, and the Clips avoided a 3-0 deficit, 118-108. Game 4, the Clippers controlled the entire game. Series 2-2 after a 106-81 win. Textbook defensive performance. 81 is, against the Mavericks, 81 points is really, really good. But Luka was dealing with a neck strain. So, I mean, obviously, that was clearly bothering him. It was painful to watch. Like I kind of feel that pain. Like, I know what that pain is like. But to play with that, he had the rock tape too. Oh, it looked painful. And I don't blame him for not playing well and his team not responding either. So that series is tied. Game 5 is tonight. Blazers Nuggets. Game 4. Melo's birthday. He scored 12 points. Norman Powell, though, was the star of this game. Not Damian Lillard. Powell scored 29 points. The Blazers played a great all-around game, won 115-95. Game 5, this was unbelievably entertaining. The Nuggets dominated early, 59-39. They had a 20-point lead, but then the Blazers had a 23-6 run to cut the deficit before halftime. It was close throughout the second half, and then Damian Lillard sent the game into overtime with a 3. Nuggets go up by 9 in the first overtime. Lillard makes 3 more threes in overtime. Not successively, but he does hit the game-tying one for 50 points. And that one was the most ridiculous shot of the game. He did a little jab step, spin, turn around, like complete 360, fade away. It was one of the most ridiculous shots I've ever seen. Not ever, but it was up there considering the time in the game that it happened. In double overtime, Lillard scores the first 5 points but doesn't score again. Uh-oh. The Nuggets win after CJ McCollum steps out of bounds with 9 seconds left. And on that play, Damian Lillard was going across half court. It looked like it was possible that he was about to get double teamed, but I mean, he has the ability to avoid that. I don't understand why he passed it to McCollum. Like, honestly, I would have rather had Lillard shot. I would have rather had Lillard take a logo shot. I mean, the dude was unconscious. Why would you pass? No, obviously, you know, McCollum was kind of open, but that pass was tipped. That was literally almost a turnover. I just don't understand what Damian Lillard was thinking there. Yeah, you kind of see McCollum open, you throw it to him, but it's a natural reaction. But when you have 55 points, you do not pass the ball. I'm sorry, you just don't. Lillard finished with 55 points, 10 assists, and an NBA playoff record, 12 threes. He was 12 of 17 from three. That broke Clay's record of 11 back in game six, you know, 2016 Western Conference Finals. And even with all that, still took the L. The Nuggets are up 3-2 in that series. I do expect Lillard to come back and win the series for Portland. But let me talk about something for a quick second. I think Damian Lillard should leave the Trailblazers. If he wants to truly win a championship. Because Portland, they're not going to make enough moves. You know, they make all these little moves like, oh, we got Carmelo Anthony. Oh, we signed Hassan Whiteside. You know, that was two seasons ago or whatever. Oh, we traded for Robert Covington. That's not enough. It's not enough. They make a bunch of minor moves with relatively significant name players, but it's nothing major. Lillard is good enough to carry this team to the Western Conference Finals consistently when everyone else around him is healthy. Obviously, you know, Nurkic had problems. CJ McCollum has problems with injuries, but I mean, they're not going to get to the finals in the West. He's not going to go to the finals on that team in the West. He's got to go somewhere else if he wants to win a championship. He's in a similar situation that James Harden was in Houston. He was this close. He was a hamstring away. 27 missed threes, but hamstring away. Chris Paul's hamstring would have held together for two more games. I believe the Rockets would have won that series and the championship because, you know, that Cavs team was LeBron and a bunch of bums. But I mean, I understand his loyalty. I respect it. I respect him staying in Portland. You know, him and Curry are the only ones who really have stayed, you know, for a long period of time now, with Harden and Wall recently changing teams. But he's got to decide what he truly wants, a title or loyalty to Portland, because I don't think he can get both. The Blazers won't do enough to help him out. It's unfortunate. It really is. Sixers-Wizards Game 3. Philly took care of business. Starters 100 of the 132 points. Led by Embiid, 36 points. He was on a mission. Game 4, the Wizards did not want to go home, and I don't blame them. Getting swept sucks. Westbrook and Beal would not let this team lose, despite Davis Bertans leaving with a calf strain. Grade 2, out for season because I don't expect the Wizards to be playing for another 4 to 6 weeks. Embiid left with knee soreness, and it turns out after an MRI, it is a slightly torn meniscus. He is considered day-to-day, though. I have so many problems with this. The future of Embiid and the Sixers, maybe I'm overreacting, but the future of Joel Embiid and the Philadelphia 76ers is in jeopardy right now. If Embiid has a slightly torn meniscus, with the way he plays, you think he's going to tear it at some point in the playoffs if he keeps playing? I do. And if he fully tears his meniscus, big men do not recover from that kind of stuff. I do not want him to become Bill Walton, man. Bill Walton won an MVP. Nobody knows this, but Bill Walton won an MVP. He was so promising. I mean, Embiid is so promising now. He's dominated the league for like 5 years now, but he missed his first two whole seasons with foot problems. And if he tears his meniscus, I don't know if there's much recovering from that. I think the Sixers need to play it safe. I mean, now obviously this year is one of your best chances, but you got to go up against KD, Kyrie, and Harden. I mean, you're not going to beat them. But this is the Sixers. I don't know if they're thinking the way I am. If they are, they have a huge dilemma right now. What do they do with Embiid? I don't think he can recover from a torn meniscus and play at the level they need him to in order to win a championship. It's a day-to-day injury, supposedly, but this is a serious problem. I really think Embiid's going to tear his meniscus completely if he, you know, decides to play. I do think they can. They definitely can win this series without him. So they should rest him the rest of the series. I think they're going to win game five anyway. But it's looking like a problem in Philly. I'm just saying. There was another fan incident in this game. A fan literally ran onto the court. He was tackled by security guards. The fans are just out of control right now. It is unbelievable. We had Trae Young getting spit on. The fan running onto the court. Someone dumping popcorn on Russell Westbrook and someone throwing a water bottle at Kyrie. This is unbelievable. All those fans have been banned. I think the Celtics one was the one that was worse. He charged with assault and battery with a dangerous weapon or whatever. But final score, 122-114. The Wizards win. They avoid the sweep. Bradley Beal, 27 points. Simmons, oh my gosh, Ben Simmons, 4 of 8 from the free throw line in the final 3 minutes. Wizards did a hack-a-Ben strategy, hack-a-Simmons, whatever you want to call it. Yeah, the score difference was 8. Like, the difference, 122-114. But if you make those free throws, it could have changed the trajectory of the game, you know, at that point in time. But with that win, the Wizards will be playing their first game in the month of June since 1978, when they won their only championship led by Wes Unseld and Elvin Hayes. They beat the Supersonics in 7 games. All right, that series is 3-1 Sixers. I expect them to close it out at home tonight in Game 5. Jazz Grizzlies. Game 3, Jazz lead by as many as 15 in the first half. The Grizzlies slowly come back. Dylan Brooks was amazing. His effort on both sides of the ball. Offense, he had 27 points offensively. And on defense, you know, he face-guarded Conley. And he still scored 27. But he did foul out. But he made some plays during Memphis's comeback that brought them back in the game late. Ja had 28. But the Jazz are just too good of an all-around team. They're too experienced compared to the Grizzlies. 121-111. I do expect the Jazz to close it out in Game 5. Because in Game 4... they won as well. Both sides fought throughout the game. Ja Morant, 23 points, but a lot of missed opportunities, like bad turnovers, missed shots. 8 of 21 from the field. 1 of 7 from 3. Oof. It's your first playoff series. You know, you're going to have your struggles. Jaren Jackson Jr. finally woke up, looked better. 21 points, 6 rebounds, 9 of 18 from the field. But Donovan Mitchell had 30. 80 of the 120 points came from the starters. Good all-around production for Utah. That's how they beat you with multiple weapons, with basically their entire rotation. Everyone on the rotation is a threat offensively besides Royce O'Neal, except O'Neal can shoot a little bit. So that series is 3-1 Jazz, and I do expect the Jazz to close it out in Game 5, even though I predicted 6 at the beginning of the playoffs. To wrap up today, this day in NBA history, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar of the Los Angeles Lakers became the all-time leading scorer in NBA playoff history at the time, surpassing Jerry West's total of 4,457 points as the Lakers beat the Celtics 136-111 in Game 3 of the NBA Finals, a series they would win in 6 games. Abdul-Jabbar was eventually passed for total playoff points by Chicago's Michael Jordan, and I believe he was ended up passed by LeBron. Happy birthday to 5'5", little man Earl Boykins. He played for 10 different teams. How about that? Maybe, probably best known for his time in Denver. That's at least what I best knew him for. So, we'll be back after the first round is complete. Game 1 of the Bucks-Nets series, which is going to be fantastic, may sneak into that episode as well. Stay tuned.